stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do not have any accounts payable today, so the amount is not just zero.
All right. Yesterday we had our work session. We had an update from the county manager, from the clerk and recorder, from Public Works, from the airport, the CSU extension, the surveyor, and the treasurer.
Madam Chair, I move to approve consent agenda items A, B, and C.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Perfect timing.
Come on up. They're here to talk about solar panels.
Thank you. Basically, I am here. I wanted to
introduce yourselves.
Yes, Sarah Jones, Tampa Valley Sustainability Council. And really just wanted to introduce Bryce Carter, who is the director of Solar United Neighbors.
Director of what?
Solar United Neighbors in Colorado.
Okay.
So, and we'll be.
And what is that? Is he going to tell us what that is?
Yeah, I'll talk about it.
So I know you guys aren't super formal about 3 minutes and 3 minutes, but I just want to say hello, introduce Bryce, and then let him talk.
So I'm glad I have 30 minutes to talk about. No, I'll try to keep it. I'll first start with Solar United Neighbors. It's a program that's been around since about 2007. Started in Washington, D.C., where our director basically looked into solar and decided that as she was learning about it, well, not just herself, but went out and her whole neighborhood along.
What's her name?
Anya.
I'm thinking she came here and met with me last year. When
you might be thinking.
No.
Deirdre, maybe? Or
I can't remember, but I think I know where you're headed with this.
Yeah. Basically what they learned was, as a learning community, they could all learn about solar and go through the process of actually doing a bulk purchase of solar so that everyone in the community could save money. And so that's how Solar United Neighbors was born, and since then we've grown now to 12 states, and Colorado is the newest state that we're launching in. So I've now been on the job for a month, but it's been a great project. We have funding that we're supporting to do a job transition training provided with Solar Energy International. So we're specifically looking at Yampa Valley and sponsoring four folks to actually get solar certification. And our goal is we provide that training, we build a cohort, and we connect that with the launch of our Yampa Valley Solar Co-op. We're going to be reaching out to businesses, we're going to be reaching out to homeowners, and having a public information session starting on March 13th. We'll be at the library here, and then 14th in the morning we'll be in Hayden, and that evening we'll be out in Craig as well to inform folks about what solar is, what it means to be part of the co-op, the benefits, and then start signing people up. And our process is, once we get to about 20 or 30 folks, they create a selection committee and they evaluate RFPs from different solar installers, decide based on their values and interests which installer to go with, and then they move forward with a contract with the installer to have kind of a base price. And we find that's oftentimes at a large cost savings for the homeowners and business owners to install solar. So from that process, then each homeowner or owner then has an agreement with the installer that's based off that initial contract. They move forward, and we celebrate at the end of it once all the solar panels are installed. And we see a lot of times, once we have one co-op, things tend to expand. So like in Florida, we launched a couple years ago. They now have 50 co-ops all across the state. So we're really excited. We're launching in Fort Collins next week, and then it'll be here in the Yampa Valley as our launch. So.
And the job training, the application is open, and it goes through March 15th, and we're looking for four people to apply, or four candidates from Hayden and Craig. So it should be a good opportunity as well. And then they'll help with, they get job training working with the installer to do the installs.
When will the training begin?
So the training is going to be the second week in Peonia with Solar Energy International. The application for it, we're going to close on March 15th.
So when did you say it would actually start, the training?
So the training with Solar Energy International will be, I believe it's April 9th, whatever that Monday is, or May is the 8th.
So how long is the training?
So the first week is going to be in person. It's solar, basically 101, how to install and all that. And then there's a second component that's an online-based training talking about grid tie and battery storage. And then that will last a couple more weeks. So we're looking at from... again, from April into May, and then we'll work with those installers to make sure that once we have the co-op launch, they have opportunities to be in the job site and get that experience as well. And they will have their full associate solar
certification.
The certification, basically, to be able to install solar. And so they'll be able to, you know, hopefully we'll be able to create some jobs as we build up the co-op. Obviously, that also includes keeping energy dollars local in the community and go from there.
I think it was a woman from Florida.
Deirdre,
that's it. Yeah, she. It was a very interesting concept.
Yeah.
Economy of scale, be able to attract an installer from the Front Range or somewhere else, because they'd be able to come up and do 30 or 40 houses at one time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And save money for them.
Yeah.
So do the people that are at the front end, they must have to make some kind of a financial commitment on the front end.
There's actually no obligation all the way until the installer signs. And then also with Soy United Neighbors, they can become a member once they join a co-op, and they get benefits of, we have a solar support team in Washington, D.C. that answers questions, looks into the technical aspects and everything else. And we also continue to be a learning community even after they install. So as things come up, we want to demonstrate your support and go from there.
Rapp County must show up on the maps as a decent solar resource.
It's been a while since we've seen the northern part, but obviously it's been across Colorado. We get a lot of sun, so there's lots of potential for that.
What are the what codes apply? Building codes apply to solar.
That's an interesting question.
In and out of the city.
What was the question?
The building codes that apply to solar.
Well, we modified all those. You know, especially the big part, the county did.
Uh-huh.
The big part was the snow loads on top of the roofs and the rest of the things. So
yeah.
Different.
And what about in the city? Do you know?
I don't know. Same code, building code.
Right. I guess I mean more the, like, the visual.
You know, it's interesting.
Those kind of codes.
It's interesting. Oh, I think there aren't restrictions.
There's not restrictions.
However,
from that perspective.
We're talking to our local solar installers, where there are potential issues is because of the building, there's more shade. So in more open, more rural areas, you actually, because you get more exposure, then it's better to do.
It works better outside of the city.
Yeah.
So is it people primarily doing a rooftop or freestanding? Rooftop is cheaper.
Yeah, rooftop generally is what we look at, though, freestanding. We also have had some pilot co-ops related to battery storage as well as even EV infrastructure at homes, especially in Colorado as we come from the East Coast to the West. I think there's a lot of interest to explore those options, so we're excited to see what we can do.
For electric vehicles?
For the infrastructure, so to actually have a charging station hook up.
As part of your solar array.
Yeah,
yeah, so it makes perfect sense.
So if you have 20 or 50 homes doing that, you obviously have a cost savings there as well. So, and then we are vendor neutral, as I mentioned. So each co-op has its own selection committee that decides on who to go with. That's also the same with financing, but we've been in contact with a bunch of different partners that are interested in providing opportunities for financing to make sure it's affordable for everybody.
Right. Exciting.
Yeah, so we're really excited to be growing the program and to launch the pilot with the workforce.
So when did you say that? I think you probably said us. I think we saw something.
March 13th is what you said, right?
Yeah.
March 13th
here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The 14th is at the greenery, and then in the morning, and then the evening's at the beer grounds.
In Craig.
Yeah.
But you're not going south?
No, although we have been in touch with SPOA. So I think... Bryce is pretty full this week.
Yeah, doing a lot of meetings.
I pretty much booked him through the next 2 days. But when he comes back in March, we're going to connect him with Oak Creek and SPOA.
Yeah.
So, because that stagecoach obviously is.
What time is the meeting?
So 6:30 at Bud Warner, 7:30
a.m.
At the Greenery.
That's kind of like a meet and greet / free coffee. And then I believe we did 6:30 again,
at
the fairgrounds, out in Craig.
How is all this funded?
So we have kind of three streams. We have grants. So fortunately, in Yucca Valley, we have an anonymous donor that wanted to support this work here. So we're working on based off of that.
Cool.
It wasn't me.
And then we also have... So with the installs, solar companies can sometimes cost many thousands of dollars to find just one customer. And so we do get $600 back from each install to support our mission and administrative support. And then we also have individual memberships as well. So it's about a third, I think, each category is averaged nationally.
You said 6:30 p.m. here?
At the library.
Okay.
Yeah. And
I'll send you guys a flyer.
Yeah, I was going to say
you're probably going to send us out another reminder. Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. Any other questions?
No.
I'll be around. And
no, great. Thank you.
Cars,
thanks for coming in.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for having us. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys want to try it as well?
Sure.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Why don't you guys come on up? As long as it doesn't turn into a run-on sentence, we're all right.
It does that from time to time.
Yeah, occasionally.
It can happen. Fred, how's it going?
I'm good, Tim. How are you?
Life is good.
Good to see you again.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
There were a few numerical errors. 18 instead of 19, but that was
okay. Well, we'll
like,
make sure
I lost my hearing.
No problem.
What a couple of one of those long. That would be a classic. We're talking about getting one of those little horns.
Yeah, for you. Yeah, earworm.
Hot trip.
That's like vacation.
Okay, I'm making
it. Is.
It is vacation.
Except that it was a really hard climb.
All right, we are looking at an RFP for an herbicide.
Correct. RFP 637. And consideration to approve, purchase, and authorize the electronic signature county manager on the purchase order for 2019 herbicides for the Road and Bridge Department to Snyder and Counts for $30,992.52.
Any questions from commissioners?
No different, exact same product. Or are there?
Yeah, no, I don't think we didn't get an indication of any substitutions. So
I thought there was one change.
Is there one change?
The bottom one.
Oh, the Brewer. Oh, okay. Brewer 90.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brewer.
That's just
that was the addition.
That's a non-ionic surfactant, so they're all comparable. 90%.
It's all the same chemicals.
Yeah, it's 90% non-ionic surfactant. So,
do they deliver?
Yeah. They normally. I just call Frank Snyder Accounts, and we just coordinate so that when they've got a truck coming up for delivery, they stop here before they. Get over there.
And you've got room to take it all at one time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, with the building now, we can put it, even if the weather's not suitable for getting it all into the chemical building, mm-hmm. at the time, we can always put it in the...
We never put any heat into that chemical building, did we?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we do have heat?
Oh, yeah, it's got...
Why wouldn't it be suitable to put it in there?
Well, you can't take it directly with the forklift and put it in the...
Oh, okay.
Sort of three-hole... walk through doors.
Okay.
So it's, you know, if it's nice out, we can just park it outside and directly load it into there. But if otherwise, we put it into the...
And then carry it, bring it over a truck at a time.
Yeah, bring it over, yeah. So, and it, they came in considerably under where I thought they would be. Because I think when I put the bid together, it was... right close to $34,000.
And what was your estimate?
That was my estimate, based upon the best price figures that I could get. And this gives us leeway so that when in mid-season we can still make purchases of any particular thing that we got through more than we anticipated.
Did we just buy exactly what we bought last year?
Not pretty close. Pretty close, but not exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I adjusted some amounts based upon our chemical use this year and what we still had in inventory. And there were some things, and that varies a little bit from year to year, depending on what we can get through. Like last year, it was so hot, we didn't go through very much product that had any dicamba in it because the labels say you can't use it over 85 degrees Fahrenheit within 24 hours. But we had a lot of days last summer where we couldn't use that. So there are a couple of products like Overdrive. It has a dicamba in it, and you can actually go down to, you can go up to 90. But my own cutoff was 80 degrees. So just to be on the safe side. So.
Would you just give me a sense of what, I don't know a lot about how this program works, so would you kind of just give me a sense of how we use these herbicides? Like, where are they applied? And mostly roadside?
Most right next to elementary school.
And old folks'
homes. Senior homes, those kind of places. Where
directly over houses.
Aerial spray is what we do really well. Just
come on, Doug.
We're operating under the Noxious Weed Act of 2003, Colorado Noxious Weed Act of 2003, which mandates that counties control weeds, and primarily in their right-of-ways. So that's our fundamental mission, is to control noxious weeds identified by the state in right-of-ways. We cannot, according to the law, we cannot mandate that people control their own noxious weeds unless we have controlled weeds on adjacent property in the right way. So that's been, since I started doing this in 2009, that's been my fundamental goal, is to make sure that we're doing our share of what we're supposed to be doing. I try to review the chemicals and use the most, the safest chemicals to get the job done.
Yeah.
But they have to be effective.
Right.
So we still have some things in the weed shed, very, very small quantities of a few products that were here when I got here in 2009, because I don't think they're really appropriate to use in most of our situations. We do quite a bit of chemical mowing to try to suppress vegetation height for both late season, so that we can see weeds that might come up in the right-of-ways later in the season, and also to control vegetation height for road safety. And that's really kind of a toss-up as to how effective that's going to be every year, because the timing on that is very critical, within a couple of days.
So you can stunt the growth of a plant.
Yeah. So the state provides a list of weeds that we control. Is that right?
Yeah, there are three lists.
You're going to get a.
We have our own list.
You're going to get a calendar. When did she get a calendar?
Yeah, I've got calendars.
Yeah, she has a noxious weed calendar.
And I have the state weed noxious, the current book too. Mm-hmm. So I'll bring it.
It's actually a really nice calendar.
He got the calendar in his locker.
Yeah.
So yes. I can bring those up to you.
That's helpful. It's helpful to just understand kind of
right.
the scope of what these programs look like.
If you spend as much time talking to Greg as I have through the years, I think you'll find that he feels really strongly that the chemicals that he uses are not dangerous to the environment, especially if they're applied in accordance with the instructions.
Yeah. This year we, and Todd is also aware of it, an extension. Just a couple of weeks ago there was a video on that came out on CNN, a report that said that, you know, glyphosate was this horribly dangerous thing. Well, it's that still doesn't conform to all of the international data. So, in fact, I just printed off a couple of things today that we were made aware of by Derek Sebastian. He actually works for Bayer now, but he was a grad student, got his PhD from CSU, and he tries to keep us aware of what is actual factual evidence.
All these things have ISDS reports on them as well, and the handling of them. All of these guys, that's part of Greg's job, is to make sure everybody's capable of handling the materials. And yeah, there's right now there's a big class action suit Monsanto's undertaking right now.
It started yesterday. It opened in California yesterday.
Against Monsanto.
Over glyphosate.
Yeah. And Beth may know, but you may want to just briefly explain the challenges of dicamba and It's not the effectiveness of dicamba just because it's hot. It's what it does when it's hot and sunny out.
Yeah, we probably are not going to end up with problems here, but like in Arkansas, Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, places where they really do have warm temperatures in the summer, glyphosate has been used primarily as a replacement for, or dicamba has been used in place of glyphosate on some soybeans that have been produced by Monsanto.
Mm-hmm.
As dicamba resistant. Well, they're much more expensive than conventional soybean seed. There are a lot of farmers in the Midwest that continue to plant non-dicamba resistant soybeans. They were planted next to a field of dicamba resistant soybeans. Somebody used it, the dicamba, in a product that volatilized and often.
So when it gets hot, drips off the plant, drips over onto somebody else.
There was actually a murder 2 years ago. One landowner murdered his neighbor because all of his soybeans were wiped out by the other guy's spraying. So we don't want to get into any of that stuff. And there are specific...
Murder? No, let's stay away from murder.
Yeah, we're just spraying around.
We've got consensus on this side of the table.
There are specific herbicides that are labeled now that have dicamba in them, that are primarily for row cropping situations, which you encounter in the.
So a question I have. So then is this a one time pickup, or are we going to go pick it all up, or is this the quantity? These are the per gallon, per quantity prices.
The per quantity prices are based upon ounces, and then we have it listed in our packaging as to how we want it packaged. And those are all.
But
so we are
going to
buy $30,000.
This is how it's packaged.
Yeah, it's here.
We got it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So it's a one-time delivery, and then they maintain that price structure for us for 6 months.
Okay.
So that we can, if we do need to.
And that's part of the RFP. Mm-hmm. We send it out. The rest.
Yeah. So yeah, and then it just it's also a matter of the RFP. We arrange shipping to suit our schedule as to when we can get it in there.
All right, we can probably take a motion. That was a lot more information than we
needed.
Oh, yeah, helpful though. Thank
you. At the bottom of the,
there's a lot to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
The cover sheet, you had 29.
Yeah, we noticed that.
I noticed
a mistake.
That as well.
Okay, so it really is the 30,000.
It is the 30,000.
And all these 2018 dates are 2019.
All right.
Madam Chair, I move that we award the purchase and authorize the signature of the county manager on the purchase order to Snyder & Counts for $30,992.52 for the 2019 herbicide purchase for the Road and Bridge Department.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's all good. Thank you.
I'll bring you a calendar.
I love a calendar.
Oh,
I've heard all about it from Ben Bell.
No. Let him. And that made me drift down the river and the like.
Actually, there is a leafy spurge river trip.
Yes. All right.
That one too.
Well, once I learn to swim, I'll go on all the river trips.
Right. She's going on the Friends of the Yampa. Yeah, Yampa Canyon trip this year.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Just get your water wings.
I know.
Get a high profile life jacket.
Everyone wears life jackets anyway. It's all right. I'll try not to fall in. All right, so we're looking at the IGA for the Green Truss Bridge.
Correct. We were awarded an on-system additional funding. We were awarded an off-system bridge grant to replace the Green Truss Bridge on County Road 67. Our original IGA was signed in 2016. Last November, during the call for projects, we submitted for and we were awarded an additional construction funds in the amount of $204,318 for the bridge. 80-20 split, so 20% of that is on us. The Road and Bridge Department received an email from CDOT informing us that we needed to sign an updated IGA for the additional funds, an amendment
for the IGA. And then this amendment will be added to the previous IGA signed in 2016, and a new IGA has been reviewed by us and the legal department. Currently, when we put in for our grant in 2016, we put in for $861,000. We finished design of the bridge in 2016, got an updated estimate from the consultant, and then we were working through acquiring our right-of-way for the project, and we were finally given a notice to bid in late 2018. So when bids came back higher than they came back higher than the $861,000 total grant funds for the construction. So usually when that happens, I'll go back to the Office of Bridge people for those additional funds, the additional construction funds, because they know that they're going to get spent that year, because the bridge is usually under contract. So that's why we're awarding for this. However, when I submitted for my additional funds, the grants were due on November 23rd. Bids came back on November 27th, and they came back higher than my original. I think my original was for $1.024 million. And so then they came back to us with $318,000 in additional funds. The last two bridges that I've built with these off-system bridge funds have come in consistently anywhere between $40,000 to $60,000 under budget, under the bid cost that we get. Currently, we have. I took a look at our budget. Currently, our budget is $559,860. Our total expenditure for this project would be $213,127, and then anything over the grant fund, which is going to be the 1.065. So if we come in to complete a bridge over the 1.065, that will be covered under the county, but we're still over $300,000 to the good based on what's in our budget for this year on the project. However, and I'll get this cleared up with accounting, because I know Ray came and talked to you guys about why I have supplemental check yes in here. When I talked to accounting, they said yes because it's over what our grant was for, so they wanted to see a supplemental, but because I feel like we're well under what we have budgeted in 2019, I want to get that finalized and sorted out. Dan wasn't around to chat with him about it.
So normally on these bridges, we budget the whole and budget the revenue coming in as well. So, but the bottom line.
So I've got, my proposed revenue that's coming in is going to be the $852,510.
Okay.
From.
That hasn't changed.
That's the Fed match. That's going to be the Fed match under this. That's 80% of 1.065. And then ours is going to be, our match in the 1.065 is going to be the $213,000.
So what is the 559? That's what the number we don't know?
That's what's in our, that's when I went back to look in our current budgeted amount. That's what's in the 2019 budget for it. So how that gets broken.
Budgeted general, our general revenue funds.
Yeah.
So we're going to be well to the good.
Yes.
But you may,
so
still,
I'm confused,
you may
about
still
need
a supplemental because of the...
Well, that's the same thing. And Mike can re-explain. We don't need the supplemental budget because we're going to run short on budgeted funds.
Okay.
But...
Because the... I was told that because the bid price is over the grant price, that's why we'll need to provide a supplemental budget.
But we'll be happy to do a supplemental budget if and when you figure it out, knowing that we're saving money on this project.
Knowing that you're getting a $1.1 million bridge for $215,000.
Right. Yeah. So
sounds like a bargain.
So if we get billed the total amount as the bid, 1.173, the difference between that and the grant funds is $321,000. And we've got budgeted $559,000, so there's a surplus.
Yeah.
But it's like a technical.
Yeah, those numbers are still not right. The budgeted amount's going to be the total bridge, bottom line. And then we're going to show the revenue coming in.
Got it.
And then our net But anyhow, I'm all for it. Yeah.
Yep.
We got to
build
the
like
$1.1 million dollar bridge while we're...
Right.
We're not going to turn back the funds because...
No.
Any other questions?
As hard as we fought on that.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve and authorize your signature on a revised IGA between Route County and the Colorado Department of Transportation for the replacement of the Green Truss Bridge on County Road 67 in the amount of $1,065,638 with a local match of $213,127.60.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right.
Thank you.
Hello. Good to see you. Good to see you.
Thank you.
So before we begin, I'm going to recuse myself from this consideration of this waiver request due to the fact that my wife is the real estate broker that's working with Judy on this property. So come and get me when you're done.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Tim. Alan, you want to go ahead?
So, Ms. Cooper has applied for a lot line adjustment for her parcel in Phippsburg, and she has requested a waiver of the application fees for that application. Application fees are $600, and so she is trying to do this in order to bring the properties into compliance with setbacks. Currently, there's a her house is over the property line. So in order to be able to sell some of those lots, she needs to bring the two properties into compliance so that she can sell the properties. So she's requesting a waiver of the fees in order to accomplish that.
Great. Do you want to add any information for us here? Ms. Cooper?
Here comes our team members with the plat. Morning, Eric. How are you?
Good morning.
I'm going to say this. Now, you all are, you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement when I tell you that I've turned 70 in December. And I'm living on Social Security at $915. I got an increase of $4 a month. That was a big deal. And so I live in that just for logistics' sake. If you don't know, right in Phippsburg, across from the sign that points says museum and points to the little White House, which is next to my log cabin. And so I'm two doors down from the Black Dog. Does that make sense
yep.
to you?
Yeah,
yeah
right
okay.
where you are.
You're all welcome to stop in, have coffee, not today, I'm not home. And here's why. Should you talk next, Eric, about...
I'll speak when you're finished.
Oh, thank you, dear. So the long and short of it was, without bogging us all down, I grew up in Glenwood, and my mother had dementia, and a brother died in front of her of a massive heart attack. And things kind of were too wonky for me to work all the time and keep myself together and my property together and my taxes together. And then I didn't know that with the water district, I've never lived anywhere where if a pipe came into your backyard and brought your water, that what the situation was about taking care of a leak, a break. So Native Excavating came in, I hired them, and they said it'd be probably about a $1,500 fee. And with the fees and me not working and trying to keep my mom in her home, et cetera, over in Glenwood, I just couldn't keep up with the money or the time or the whatever, and $600 is really a lot of money to me. So I'm not woe is me, but I'm saying I don't need a $22 million bridge to get across the highway, but I really would appreciate some thoughts and compensations about the best way to do this. And because I'm a... I don't know if I should say this out loud or not, because I'm a Capricorn. I'm not about to throw my hat in and die under the bridge because I'm tougher than that. And so I just have this little White House next to me on its own land. And so Donna said, well, why don't you just cut that place loose? So a guy bought it within a week and a half. And so this is part of all that. Would you say, Eric? Does that sound?
It's my understanding there's a a buyer that's interested in the property. I always find visuals helpful. So
we have a little bit of, talk about Mr. Corrigan being conflict of interest. We also probably have a little bit of conflict of interest. Because not only do we have the tax liens, but we also have the utility lien on it as well. Mm-hmm. And it's the utility liens on both properties as well.
Yeah, Doug, I don't know that that equals necessarily a conflict of interest the way that I would use that term.
We have an interest here then.
let me explain to you from my perspective what's happened here. This came to my attention by way of the planning department and the county surveyor, Tom Effinger, who did some survey work on Ms. Cooper's lots. And this is what it looks like. Ms. Cooper currently owns all of these lots in this darkened area here, 11 through 14. The legal situation here, or the legal problem, is that the house in which Ms. Cooper resides straddles the boundary line or property line of lots 12 and 13. That's a non-conforming situation, and we would not allow that to happen anywhere else in the county. The reason that this has occurred this way is that there are no setbacks. This is zoned commercial, so there are no setbacks that would be violated. So arguably, Tom argued with me, or presented to me, is that an easement could be done to allow the residents to stay where it is, and this lot here, lot 12, be sold to the interested buyer. How the money is used is sort of irrelevant from my perspective.
Okay.
It's more about fixing this boundary line. An easement, I think, would create clout on title, and it wouldn't solve the non-conforming situation here, in my opinion. What would solve it would be a very clean lot line adjustment, drawing the new boundary here, which is, I think, north. Yes, it's north of the residence, alongside the residence, and then notched down in a southward direction, and giving an equal exchange of property between the two lots, enhancing the value. But again, that's not really a legal concern, but it would make a very clean lot line adjustment, carve out to allow the residents to stay where it's at. The residence has been there for 80 years?
It's 109 years old.
109.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the issue, so it was actually my suggestion and strong recommendation that a lot line adjustment be done here rather than dealing with an easement. We clean up what's been a bit of a headache to the county down in that area for a long, long time. Ms. Cooper is able to sell her property. The new buyer knows exactly what's his and what isn't his. There's no clout on title. I think this is a win-win situation for the county, Ms. Cooper, the buyer, the planning department, everybody involved.
But we're not being asked to approve the lot line adjustment.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, this is the initial stage where just the fee waiver is at stake here. To be honest with you, I feel partly responsible here in that I've made the strong recommendation that this be done via lot line adjustment. Unfortunately, there's a $600 price tag
with a lot line adjustment. What are our policies regarding waiver of fees?
At the administrative level, it's government agency or a nonprofit that substantially benefits the citizens of Rock County. And if it doesn't meet that criteria, it gets bumped up to the board and there are no scandals.
It's in your discretion,
okay,
based on the circumstances. Again, I think there is a public interest here, probably not one that fits the administrative approval of a fee waiver, but the public interest here is that we have a cleaner situation here, and we clean up a non-conforming situation in the county.
Is that going to happen through the lot line adjustment then? I guess I want to make sure that, you know, that if we are approving the waiver, that you know, the monies that are garnered, that are owed to the treasurer, not to me, not to us, mm-hmm, specifically, mm-hmm, but everybody, the monies that are going to the treasurer then are in fact given there. So would that be through the replat process? We wouldn't be signing off on the replat till we had a check with it?
I don't think that's necessary. I thought about that and talked to staff with planning and county attorney's office of proposing an agreement. Because there's another problem here. When we go to record the new plat with the lot line adjustment, we require payment of all taxes.
Exactly. That's why I asked.
At that time. Okay. Yep. Here, we have a chicken and egg problem. Can't pay the taxes until the property is sold. Can't sell the property until the lot line adjustment is done. By operation of property sale alone, that will cure the problem because the title company will require that all taxes be paid. Don't even need a separate agreement to accomplish that. And it also would require that the lien for the water system mm-hmm. be paid as well.
We'll craft a condition of approval.
Say what?
So we'll craft a condition of approval that takes care of that.
With the lot line adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That'll serve as backup to what's already going to be required to occur.
So on a lot line adjustment, are there any other, I mean, is the $600 covenant, or is there additional fees based on the complexity in the situation of the lot line adjustment?
If something were to come up, but I think for the most part, if it's just a straight lot line adjustment, $600 is usually pretty close.
Okay. This is about as simple as they get.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No.
I assume no one is here for public comment on this issue. Just making sure.
Sometimes the answer appears before the same time the question does. Because with the fees, et cetera, that were connected to Native excavating, the problem got really big financially for me, of course, not to reiterate what you said, Eric, at all. But a gentleman had been watching for tax sale property, I guess, lives in Fort Collins, and he's like, his wife's taught college over there for 40 years, and he's a tinkering person. And he saw that in the paper, and he showed up, and he went right over and signed up and did all the paperwork with Donna that very day. So we're, just like Eric said, we're kind of horse and cart. I hope I didn't say that out of turn.
Well, I'm a little leery of the precedent we're setting here. I'm not really too happy with it. I guess we could probably forego it for now, and you'd be part of the closing and the rest, the $600. It's not the county's fault that we're in this situation, but I'm willing to go on here with the thing. And
thank you.
And
I
just
appreciate
to move the matter on for the prosperity of the community of Phippsburg. So,
I would agree. I mean, I would have some concern with precedent, but it seems like a somewhat unique situation and a way to ensure the prosperity of... I would agree with your comments around that.
So, Madam Chair, regarding the proposal regarding the Judy Cooper fee waiver request at PL 19-112, I move that we approve up to $600 of that fee waiver request.
Thank you.
Would you like to state the findings of fact for the record?
Say what?
There's some recommended finding of facts. Would you like to state those for the record as well?
Finding that we found so. I don't know. I've got it here. I don't know that the first one's appropriate. And I don't know that the second one's appropriate. I was finding that it's in the public's best interest to be moving forward with this in this manner.
Second? Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good.
Thank you. Stop by and get a donut.
Hey.
Lemon tree and study. Go ahead.
Hey, I have Andy Rossi from the Upper Yampa Conservancy District and also Lynn Halliday representing the Upper Yampa Watershed Group here. This item is consideration for a supplemental budget request in the amount of $5,000 and a resolution to support a USGS study titled Characterization of Stream Flow, Suspended Sediment, and Nutrients in the Upper Yampa River Basin. The purpose is to characterize stream flow, suspended sediments, and nutrients using historic and more recently acquired water quality data. Also, with the idea of trying to stay ahead of pending regulations for or related to discharge limitations for nutrients, and hopefully to avoid potential public health issues in the future related to algal blooms. Like we said, the proposed expenditure is $5,000. The total estimated cost for the study is $144,500. There was a grant from the Yampa White River Roundtable awarded in the amount of $77,000, a little over $77,000. The USGS would cover $47,000, and the remaining costs are covered by local partners, including Route County. Results of the study can help inform the development of subsequent mitigation tools. Analysis will also result in prioritizing sites in the basin that warrant near-term attention. And I think that taking a proactive approach could reduce potential negative economic impacts from harmful algal blooms, help control future costs associated with mitigations, and better meet water discharge and permitting requirements. Not taking proactive steps would reduce the ability to effectively respond to these issues. So I've left you with a lot of paper to review, and I'm
electronically.
Sure, electronically, right? So, and I know that you're very familiar with the project, Doug. And I don't know if you have any other questions for me or Andy or Lynn, but I think that that's about it.
Great. Do you have questions you'd like to ask?
Just a quick one. So we're primarily concerned about algae blooms in Stagecoach Reservoir. Is that where?
That's part of it. We talked about, you know, we have, for example, Phippsburg is a wastewater facility that we're all very familiar with, but discharges into the Yampa River. And with potential upcoming higher or lower limitations for nutrients, it could affect our ability to meet permit requirements. And so by understanding this issue, we're just trying to stay ahead of those potential changes. So that's another reason. I also think about the White River that has problems with algae, and I don't know how that's affected that area economically, but I would think that, you know, it affects the fishery, maybe some recreation, and we certainly don't want to see that here. So to try to understand these things ahead of time, hopefully we can avoid getting in the same situation.
The other question I have was CPW asked to participate.
Good question.
Yeah, I can answer that a little bit. And a little bit back to the first question you had. Indeed, Stagecoach has algal blooms and it has had for a number of years.
Right.
And
forever.
Yeah.
Since
it was built, correct. That was the nascent sort of impetus for this study coming together. And with a study in a large water body like that, you're going to have to look out area-wide and upstream into the county lands. We want to make sure we had a scientific, unbiased approach to that study so that no sort of stone was left unturned scientifically, and also we didn't start assigning any sort of causation before it was thoroughly looked at. So CPW is our partner with Upper Yampa Water Conserving District at Stagecoach, and to date they have provided funding for increased testing at the lake itself, specifically for algal blooms. Their primary concern, of course, is human contact with those, and they've been testing regularly now for a couple years to make sure they're on top of that situation.
So they're participating at
correct
that level.
Yep.
And then isn't a certain amount of this nutrient loading? Is there still some residual from the original flooding of the reservoir and all the stuff that's down at the bottom there?
Right. That is all considered in the study, okay, for sure. And until we have the scientists take a look at all that and get their arms around the entire study, that'll be part of it as well. So I don't want to speak before they have a chance to look at the data.
Okay.
I think it's important to note that we have 12 sites that we're looking at, not just the reservoir. And this is, you know, you all have supported the water quality monitoring program, which we appreciate a ton. And we've been able to get this baseline data, which is really important for us going forward, so we understand where we're at and where, when we see trends. We're seeing phosphorus elevation trend. And I know some of the agricultural people are telling me anyway that they're seeing algae in their livestock ponds, potentially in their irrigation infrastructure. So these issues go just go beyond just the reservoir itself, although the state parks have been involved in our meetings, and they're very concerned as well, especially when we run into some toxic blue-green algae species that we have at Stagecoach. But it does extend further, and if, I don't know if it's part of your package, but we have a map. So pretty much upper basin-wide that we're working here. And we'll get a
pretty good, think we have that
much better understanding of.
From Elkhead Creek confluence to the Yamba up.
So we'll remember that we had this presentation about September during the summer. We actually approved the money there. The problem then was that we didn't get it in the budget. So the $5,000 that we conceptually approved at that point in time
didn't find its way in. So that's why we have to do it.
So we're coming back now.
Got it.
Scott's coming back to actually add the money, and so we have budgetary authority to be spending the money. So
absolutely.
And you know, the best way I've heard it explained to me is that, you know, there's probably a lot of reasons why we're having these issues, and it's you look at it like a piece of pie. You know, there's temperature, and there's, you know, geology, and there's turnover in the lake, and all of these are pieces of the pie, but we don't know to what extent those factors contribute. And so that's kind of the idea behind the study, is to look at all that and figure out, you know, how big of the piece of pie is each one of those potential causes.
So it's getting a baseline, but it's also identifying some of the causes of these issues. Is
Hopefully,
that right?
Yeah.
It's doing both simultaneously. How long does a study like this take to complete?
What's that?
How long will a study like this take to complete?
So the interesting thing, and I'll answer number one, was that the roundtable had a huge heartburn. There's no new quantitative studies going on. They're going to use existing data out of what they have already to come up and analytically use some chemists to go out and figure out kind of things and figuring out what's going on there. That was a huge heartburn at the roundtable. This is what. But then we don't need to go get more studies if we already have the information. So they were. The roundtable was mostly concerned about spending money to USGS. Is that right? USGS to do some of the stuff that they should be doing anyhow, but they don't have budget for and the rest. So, and they're a big partner in this thing.
Yeah, right. And so, right. And then you recall maybe from previous conversations that we've talked about is that our efforts to collect data on the Yampa River are just a data collection effort. It's not.
There's no analysis.
There's no analysis, and so. We're taking some of that data and some other data and doing a study, analyzing that data, and trying to find some answers related to nutrients.
To answer your original question, did you guys get a project timeline in your materials?
Maybe I missed it.
Don't know if you did. I'm not
yeah.
sure.
It's a two-year project.
It's a two-year project.
I see it. Okay.
And there will be a draft report available for all of the public and especially the contributing partners in the basin to look at before it becomes final. So the USGS is our sole consultant. They're the people doing the work here. Lynn will provide some project management for us, and the Upper Yampa District is going to be the fiscal agent for this arrangement. So,
and we're also, you know, leveraging $47,000 from the USGS. So they are contributing to the project.
Well, given the fact that we already conceptually approved that, are you ready for a motion?
I'm ready. Any other?
Yep.
All right. Madam Chair, I'd move to approve a supplemental budget request in the amount of $5,000 and for you to sign a resolution in support of the proposed USGS nutrient study.
Second.
So we're signing a new resolution, though. It's not.
It's not actually. Oh, did we have
it? It is a resolution, right?
Yep.
So, do we need the resolution number for the record as well? So, that would be 006.
Did you get that? Resolution number 006.
Any other discussion? Did you already second?
Yep.
I thought you did. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Well, keep us all informed.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will.
Appreciate it.
You just
I'm going to read this thing.
Oh, okay.
I, acting as chair, move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to receive legal advice concerning the county attorney pending matters list and the litigation and claim document. This executive session is not being electronically recorded, as the county attorney has advised the discussion is subject to attorney-client privilege. This is an executive session for conference with the county attorney for the purpose of receiving legal advice on specific legal questions under CRS Section 24-6-4024B. I caution each participant to confine all discussion to the stated purpose of the executive session and that no formal action may occur in the executive session. If at any point in the executive session any participant believes the discussion is going outside the proper scope of the executive session, please interrupt the discussion and make an objection. It is February 26, 2019, and the time is 1:43 p.m.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I was going to say that up front, but I said, no, maybe you're right.
You ready?
The time is now 2:42 p.m., and the executive session has been concluded. The following persons were present at the executive session. Do I say everyone, or can everyone just say their own names?
Eric Knaus.
Thank you.
Linnea South.
Dan Weinheimer.
Tom Sullivan.
Sue Zulovich.
Doug Bunker.
Tim Corrigan.
Beth Melton. The board limited its discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into executive session, and no formal action was taken.
Did you get the times? Thank you.
We're out.
From here, you'll get...
For me to, okay. I, acting as chair, move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to discuss the performance review of the county manager. This executive session is being electronically recorded, but minutes of the meeting will not be produced. This is an executive session for the following purpose: for discussion of a personnel matter under CRS Section 24-6-4024F. 1 and 2, and not involving any specific employees who have requested discussion of the matter in open session. Any member of this body or an elected official, the appointment of any person to fill an office of this body or an elected official, or personnel policies that do not require the discussion of matters personal to particular employees. I caution each participant to confine all discussion to the stated purpose of the executive session and that no formal action may occur in the executive session. If at any point in the executive session any participant believes the discussion is going outside the proper scope of the executive session, please interrupt the discussion and make an objection. It is February 26, 2019, and the time is 2:46 p.m.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. 20, and the executive session is concluded. The following persons were present at this executive session: Tim Corrigan, Doug Monger, and Beth Melton. The board limited its discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into executive session, and no formal action was taken. And we are now adjourning our regular meeting, correct? Yes.